It's a very good introduction to the sermon today. Because our ears have been opened, and we have been given understanding. And many prophets, indeed righteous men, have wondered about things that are in the Bible. And of course, one of those men was Daniel, who, as we'll see in a moment, wrote some amazing prophecies. And at the end, he was just told, that's it, you've done your job, off you go. You'll get your inheritance at the end of the end. But what I'd like to do today is read you something here from the back end of a sermon that Mr. Armstrong gave at the Feast of Tabernacles in 1981. Because I just checked out some information recently, and I saw this and I thought, this is interesting. Perhaps we should be doing this. He comes to the end of his sermon. He says, we're to reign with Christ on his throne, ruling this earth and the government of this earth. I have talked with many of the kings, the emperors, the prime ministers, the presidents over nations. They're just human beings like you and I. But you and I, brethren, are going to be sitting on those thrones. Do you realize that? If we are preparing, if we are spending our time in prayer and in Bible reading, if we're growing closer to God, you have gained, he says, have you gained knowledge of the things of God since the last Feast of Tabernacles a year ago? I have. Have you? I'm in my 90th year now, and I've learned a lot in this last year. I try to pass on to you what I've learned, and I'm passing on some of that to you today that I did not know a year ago. Are you closer to God than you were a year ago? Just where do you stand? The church is going to be ready, but are you going to be ready? That doesn't mean everybody in the church, brethren. You need to realize that. And I think that's rather stunning in the light of what's happened to the church since then. And then he turns to Revelation 20, verse 4, and he reads, and I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Christ. And in brackets, they'd given up their lives in martyrdom. And the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark on their forehead. And those are the very things, we're going to have to cover very soon, all over again. I was covering things like that some 50 years ago. So that makes that about, 80 years ago now? About the mark of the beast, the image of the beast, and so on. Well, the time is coming now when we're going to have to get back to those things again. So I thought, why don't we get back to those things again? So today we'll just do that. We'll go through the basic framework of prophecy that Jesus Christ revealed to his end-time apostle. Let's refresh the memory, because the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire is about to become a reality. So we start with, who is the beast? This is the 1960 edition. Mr. Armstrong starts by saying, who is the beast? If you have his mark, you must suffer the seven last plagues. Is he a mysterious Superman world dictator yet to appear? Is he the Antichrist? Or a government? Or a church? The most important question of the hour is, what or who is the beast, the image of the beast, and the mark of the beast spoken about in the book of Revelation? Whatever this weird beast, whatever this baffling image, whatever this mysterious mark, it behooves you and me to find out. For it is those in this very present generation who shall be worshipping this beast or his image and shall have received his mark that will suffer the unspeakable torture of the seven last plagues. Ignorance is no excuse. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, says the Eternal in Hosea 4 verse 6. And the illustration of Ezekiel's watchman shows that those who are unaware because they were not warned will suffer just the same. And then in Ezekiel 33 verse 17, to make a note of it, God expects the spiritual leader of his people to be his watchman and to warn the people. The time is at hand. Now, Mr. Armstrong did this. There are several booklets going through the book of Revelation and talking about the beast and the mark of the beast and so on. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to go through some of the scriptures to start with, and then we can go through some of the explanations. Because at first glance, it sounds very complicated, and yet when you put it all together, because we have the understanding, it really isn't. It really isn't. And the amazing thing is that these prophecies, that Daniel was given 2,500 years ago have been worked out to the degree, to the nth degree. We're part of that right now. So let's turn to Daniel 2. Let's see the, how can we call it, the raw material that Mr. Armstrong, when he was starting his study, what he actually had to work with. Daniel 2, verse 1. The king had a dream that troubled him. I think it troubled the magicians and so on as well, because if somebody says to you, I've had a dream and it's worrying me, and they say, what's the dream about? And you say, well, I can't remember. But if you don't sort it out, you're for the chop. You've had it. Or as they said back in those days, you'll be a dunghill. Let's just read it. Verse 5. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known unto me the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. That got the blood circulating. For this cause the king was angry with and very furious, and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. Which makes you wonder about his wisdom, because, you know, if you've had a dream and you've forgotten about it, how can you expect somebody else to remember what you've been dreaming about? Verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire the mercies of God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then there was a secret revealed unto Daniel in the night vision, and then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. God gave him the interpretation. So down into verse 28 now of Daniel 2. And facing up to the king, he said, but there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall happen in the latter days. Right now. Isn't that amazing? 2,500 years ago, this dream that Nebuchadnezzar dreamt and forgot, and God had to reveal it back to him, was all about now. That's incredible. The dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. You, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before you, and the form thereof was terrible. The image's head was of fine gold, his breast and arms of silver, his belly and thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. You saw to the stone that was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet, that were of iron and clay, and break them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain, and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell you the interpretation thereof before the king. Right, that's what you've dreamt. Now we'll sort it out. You, O king, are the king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given you a kingdom and power and strength and glory. You see what he's pointing all the time back, which again we can take on board today, because we realize that the world leaders are there because God put them there. And sometimes they do things that we scratch our heads and say, well, that's like crazy, like letting a million Muslim young men into Germany, for instance, or into Europe. But they're there. These people are there for a reason. And they're there to work out this plan that's being laid out here 2,500 years ago. And whithersoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the air have been given to your hand. And it's made you ruler over them. You are the head of gold. That would have appealed to his vanity, wouldn't it? And after you shall arise another kingdom, inferior to you, and another kingdom, a third kingdom of brass, that shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for insomuch as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, and as iron that breaks all these things shall it break in pieces and bruise. Verse 41. And whereas you saw the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it the strength of iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part iron and part clay, so the kingdoms should be partly strong and partly broken. Now you can even see that already in Europe, can't you? There's some tremendous strengths in the place in many areas, and in other areas it's a shambles. Verse 43. And whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. In other words, it's not going to work. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these nations, and it shall stand forever. Verse 45. Forasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it brake in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made it known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof is sure. And this had a profound effect on Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 46. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. And the king answered Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing that you could reveal this secret. So we have this amazing event here, which sets the groundwork for what comes next, Daniel 7. You know, you've got to feel sorry for Daniel, because when he gets given all this amazing information, and he hasn't a clue what's going on. He hasn't a clue. But he was faithful, and he was a great man, let's face it. He was virtually running the Babylonian Empire. So he was a tremendous man. But he didn't have this understanding, which is what Mr. Armstrong read in Matthew there, you know, that many righteous men would love to know what we know today. You can imagine Daniel's face when he realized, and he could sit down and somebody can explain to him, you told them this is what happened. And go right through that prophecy, as you can do, year upon year, decade upon decade. So Daniel 7 verse 3, we're back into beasts now. And four great beasts came out of the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And behold, another beast, a second, like a bear. After this I behold, and lo, another, like a leopard. A beast also had four heads, and dominion was given unto it. As we'll see here, the detail is absolutely incredible. Verse 7. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. So this fourth beast was just something bordering on unimaginable. Verse 8, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were the eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. We'll come back to that later on. Verse 16, drop down to verse 16. And I came near to one of them, and stood by, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me, and made me know the interpretation of these things. Verse 17. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall rise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others. This obviously had a bit more of an effect on him. Exceedingly dreadful, whose teeth are of iron, his nails of brass, which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns that were on his head, and of the others which came up, and before whom the three fell, even of that horn that the eyes and the mouth that spake great things, whose look was more stout than that of his fellows. Verse 21. We're starting to get an inkling here now of what this little horn is. And behold, the same horn made war with the saints, and prevailed against them. Verse 22, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came for that the saints possessed the kingdom. Now, Mr. Armstrong makes a note there, and he says, students of prophecy recognize this little horn as a great religious hierarchy. It's referring to the Catholic Church. Now, we're going to the New Testament. And it gets more and more. This is the kind of, when Mr. Armstrong was studying this, and as he said, he studied on his knees. He had to study on his knees. And God gave him the link up between these scriptures. Revelation 13. Now let's have a look at John's beast. Revelation 13, verse 1. And again, you know, try and keep in mind, you know, this is a man. This is a man, and from what we can gather, rather an old man, probably way up in his 80s or early 90s. And again, he's being shown things which are just mind-blowing. Absolutely. I mean, today, for us, we get so used to it, don't we? I noticed in the news the other day, they've got a robot now. It walks around and it climbs over things, and it's a backflip. Complete backflip. Utterly amazing. Verse 1 of Revelation 13. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were of the feet of a bear, and his mouth the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. Well, I don't think we've had any trouble sorting out who the dragon is. He's the god of this world, Satan. And he has given this beast this power. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, they gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? As I say, we'll identify all these players in the great plan in a minute. Let's just keep going through the scriptures here. Verse 5, and there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. In verse 6, and he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, and blasphemed his name, and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. You know, Mr. Armstrong was just talking about that right now, wasn't he? He was talking about the churches of this world who talk about Christ, but not to keep his law. You don't keep the law. There's no works. And yet, if you read the Bible, the New Testament, it's pretty obvious that there are works. So they are. It's blasphemy. They're going completely... They're using God's name to foist off on humanity a whole load of rubbish. And he opened his mouth, verse 6, in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints, to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. But as we just heard, you've got to have an ear that can hear, haven't you? You've got to have the understanding to know what's actually going on here. Now, verse 10. He that leads into captivity shall go into captivity. He that kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. And I beheld another beast coming out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and caused the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he did great wonders, so that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceived them that dwelt on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. So here now we get the image of the beast coming in. Verse 15. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. Verse 17. That no man might buy or sell, save he had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. 666. I say we'll come back to all this in a minute. Let's just see what Mr. Armstrong, this is the raw material that he had, he was studying. Revelation 17. Revelation 17, verse 1. And there came out of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked to me, saying unto me, come hither, and I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sits on many waters, the great prostitute, for whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-coloured beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Now, here we have the woman sitting on the beast. Now, if you're sitting on a beast, you're controlling it. Or you should be. When I was early teens, I got to ride a horse. And it's quite an interesting experience. I mean, you've not had it. And we went on a trek of about 5 or 6 or 7 miles or so to a river and had a picnic with a group. And then we came back. But what nobody told me was the horse knew that on the way back, that the sooner it got home, the sooner it got some food, and the sooner it got some water. And my horse decided it was just going to go, and got into a gallop. And I hung on for dear life. It was quite a thrilling experience. But I was riding the beast, and the beast was doing exactly what it wanted. But not here. This woman's riding the beast and controlling the beast. I have since graduated, by the way. I now drive 280 horses, and it's much more reliable, except when it doesn't work. We won't go into that after this week. Verse 4, and the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet colour, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of the abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. You just get the impression this person is not very well liked in God's eyes. And can't really think of anything much nastier to say about anything. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said to me, wherefore do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. You see, we're getting back to heads and horns again. Verse 8, Revelation 17. The beast that you saw was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. Do you get the impression this is written in such a way that you've got to be given understanding, otherwise you ain't going to get it? And I'll tell you, if you check on the internet as to this people in the world who try to explain this lot, and you get quite a good laugh, quite frankly. They're trying very hard, but they're very trying. Revelation 17, verse 9. And here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now, I've often wondered why John was made to write like this. But you know, when you lived in the Roman Empire, I don't think you'd probably want to blurt all this out in plain English, would you? You wouldn't last very long. You know, the court system in those days was kind of swift. Yeah. In, wang, bam, and gone. End of story. Not like today, where they lock you up for 6 months before they listen to the case, and then it takes 3 years for the case, and then, yeah. 17 verse 10. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen. One is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. Again, this, when you look at the meaning of this verse, this is remarkable. This is remarkable. This was written basically to Mr. Armstrong, if you think about it. But we'll go into that in a minute. Right, Mr. Armstrong in Who is the Beast? This is the explanation of who is. The one that is the kingdom that extended from Garibaldi to the downfall of Mussolini. It was not in any sense the power-wielding old Roman Empire, so during the stage of the ninth horn, Revelation 13, or the sixth head of Revelation 17. John speaks of it as the beast that was and is not and shall arise once more out of a bottomless pit. You see, when Mr. Armstrong wrote this, the beast that is, was. It wasn't until the late 30s when that part of the Roman Empire was dissolved, because they went to the king and declared it to be the Holy Roman Empire. I mean, it was a very limited thing. It's very much limited to North Africa and so on. But nevertheless, you get the impression it's the way it's mentioned. It is. But what I found really interesting, in verse 10 it says, "And the other is not yet come. Five have fallen, five have been, and one is." So as Mr. Armstrong was studying this, that one was extant. Mussolini was still in power until after the war. Even that's rather remarkable, isn't it? Now then, I've got a co-worker letter I want to quote from here, because we come to Revelation 17, verse 11. Let's read the verse first. "And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goes into perdition." It's getting a bit complicated, isn't it? So we just sort it out. Now, I'd like to make a note of this co-worker letter. It's August the 14th, 1978. I do suggest you go on the website, get back on track, get this and read it. Because Mr. Armstrong goes through a whole load of this in this co-worker letter. In fact, this is some of the best explanations of some of these things I got at the co-worker letter, because in the booklet, to be honest, the explanation I just found rather confusing. But this is verse 11. It says, "And this beast is the eighth and is of the seven." That is, it is of following after as part of the seven heads of the 13th chapter beast. It is the eighth. The first seven, you have Babylon, you have Persia, you've got the four heads of Greece and the Roman Empire knocked off its plinth on 476 AD. And then it came back. It came back after that. So this is the continuation of the same Gentile system. It is the final stage of the entire system, dating from 604 BC to Christ's second coming, but it shall go into perdition. In other words, utter destruction. So you've got Babylon, you've got Persia, you've got the four Greece one, and you've got the Roman Empire. There's your seven. But that seven, the seventh one, stopped in 476 when Rome was destroyed. But it came back, effectively becoming the eighth. That's what it actually means here. 17 verse 12. "And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which shall receive no kingdom as yet, but shall receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast." There's a few things there that are rather interesting. It says, "are ten kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings for 1 hour with the beast." Now, 1 hour is a short time. It's a very short time. "And they have one mind and shall give their power and strength to the beast." Do we see it happening in the news today? Do we see the nations of Europe now, 20 of them, I believe, giving their power, their military might, into an EU army, which is, believe it or not, controlled by Germany? Just, it's a point of interest. We'll go into some of these things in a bit later. "They have one mind and shall give their power and strength to the beast." Why? Do they have one mind today? Well, they're struggling a bit with that, aren't we? We have Poland wanting to leave the EU. And we have Mr. Macron in France trying to make France great again. Not a lot of chance of that, I fear. But never mind. We've got Mrs. Merkel in a muddle. Give their power and strength to the beast. This has got to come out of a disaster. You don't get a dictator coming into power when everything's smooth. And we'll get onto that in a minute. "These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful." See? We get a mention. "And he said to them, the waters which you saw, where the whore sits, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." All symbols, but they're all being explained. "And the ten horns that you saw upon the beast, these shall hate the whore and shall make her desolate and naked and eat her flesh and burn her with fire." It seems that into the tribulation period at some stage, the beast turns on the Catholic Church. Verse 17, for God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will. And that's something we, I think, really have got to concentrate on. When we see crazy things going on in the world, they're not crazy. They're happening for a very, very sound reason. God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will. He is bringing it all about. He's bringing it all about to where Christ can come and destroy the vast majority of the nations. To be resurrected at a later time, they've not missed out, and set up his kingdom on the earth. For God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom into the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. These European nations don't want to give their power to anybody. In fact, at the moment, they're trying to all run in all different directions. Again, all because of a crazy, apparently, decision by Mrs. Merkel to allow all these Muslims into Europe. It's causing all sorts of problems. She's sitting there at the moment trying to form a government. And she'd better form a government, because if she has another election, the right wing will make a bigger inroads. But it looks like they're going to finally agree. But the fact that it's taken so long means it's not going to be a good agreement. It's still going to be a weak, shaky government. But again, God says, and God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom into the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. It's all part of a plan. And as we mentioned some weeks back, God's plan is what Job had to learn. One of the things Job had to learn. God's plan cannot be thwarted. Cannot be thwarted. Verse 18, and the woman which you saw is the great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. Now, we have the beast. Let's start looking at who's who in the zoo here now. Mr. Armstrong says, let us be... This is all from the Beast booklet. And there are two of them. And they should be made... Urgent reading. We need to understand what's going on, because you can see it in the daily news now. Mr. Armstrong says, let's be consistent. The beast of Revelation 13 is not the woman who rode the beast. The beast is the government and the woman is the church. The beast of Revelation 13 is the Roman Empire. That's the beast. The beast had a deadly wound, Revelation 13 verse 3. That means the beast ceased altogether to exist or function as it had since 31 BC. Yet its deadly wound was later healed, after which, verse 5, it continued to exist for another 1260 years, which prophetically a year for a day is 42 months. However, the beast also can be referred to a man. Because if you look at Revelation 19, verse 20, a time when I think there'll be a bit of rejoicing among the people in as in the church. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, and with which he had deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and that worshipped his image. And both were cast alive into a lake of burning fire and brimstone. So again, you have the beast, and you have the image of the beast. We'll go into that in a minute. Now, just a quick... There's been a lot of speculation over the years to who is going to be the man, the beast. Okay? Don't waste your time. I'll show you why. Isaiah 10 verse 5 is quite clear. It says, O Assyrian, single person, the rod of my anger and the staff of their and the staff in their hand is my indignation. Now, Assyria today, we know, is the German. It's not just Germany. It's quite a bit more bigger than Germany. So, okay, he's going to be an Assyrian, right? How about President Trump? He's an Assyrian. Yeah, his father was from Germany. He's an Assyrian. Arnold Schwarzenegger is an Assyrian. 80 million Americans have got German descent. Think about it. 80 million from Germany, originally. And, of course, we've got Europe. Adolf Hitler wasn't a German. He was born in Austria. So he will be revealed, and his works will make him obvious. And it's interesting, the 666, the number 666, Mr. Armstrong goes into, you can get all the details in the booklet. I don't take the time at the moment to go into that. But the 666 identifies Rome as controlling the beast power, but it's also the number of a man. So apparently, somehow, we work it out. I would rather think that it's going to be pretty obvious who the beast is. He won't look like the beast to start with. Hitler didn't, did he? When Hitler started off, they thought he was the saviour. The Germans have been running to the bank with a barrel load of notes to buy one loaf of bread. I think I've said before, they buy a bottle of wine on the Friday because you had to pay a deposit on the bottle in those days because bottles were expensive. And you took the thing back on the Monday, got more money back on the empty bottle than you had on when you had it full of wine on the Friday. Inflation was ludicrous. Hitler stopped all that. Bought the new Deutschmark in and stable currency, prices stayed the same, got full employment, got a bit of national feeling going in people. Just about like Wales. I've never seen such a bunch of nationalists in all my life. You go into the Tesco's here and you get all the meat. And then suddenly there's a separate bit. It's all Welsh. All Welsh lamb. Then it's all Welsh beef. And you get the butchers at the back there where they actually will actually cut meat for you or whatever. And there's big you know, they're all red dragons everywhere. This is Welsh beef. Welsh potatoes. Interesting. But we're going to see nationalism here on an unheard of level. And it's going to be down to virtually worshipping. Worshipping people, there's going to be some horrendous things happen, some of them before we are taken out of all this. Really, there's some massive things we've got to change, and we've got to watch very carefully. Right, the beast of Revelation 13 is the Roman Empire. Now, what's the image of the beast? Right, Mr. Armstrong again in the booklet says the first pope in the real sense of the word was Leo. That's 440 to 460. Says the Encyclopedia of Biblical, Theological and Ecclesiastical Literature. Volume 7, page 629. Don't bother going to your local library. They won't have one. To him, the form of government of the Roman Empire was the most marvelous thing on earth. It became an obsession. He applied its principles to the church, organized the church into a government, forming the papacy. The church government or organization is the image of the beast. The church government then, according to this historical authority, is in fact a model, a counterpart, an image of the beast, which is the Roman Empire government. From the top down, one man at the top, filtering on down and two. But don't you realize where it is? It's a counterfeit of God's government. It's an exact counterfeit of God's government. But then again, the Pope claims to be Christ on earth, doesn't he? And he claims that this is the kingdom of God. You know, if this is the kingdom of God, I'm glad I'm 70-odd. I've not got an awful lot longer to put up with it. I think it's pretty bad. I think it's pretty bad. And every day you look at the news, you don't want to cry. If this is the kingdom of God, what kind of a God? Well, of course it is the kingdom of God. It's the kingdom of the God of this world, who's so perverted. What about the other day in Sweden now? They're getting little toddlers, right? They got this wonderful new book for them. The main hero is a man and his friend is a horse. The problem is the man's a cross-dresser. He comes home from work, puts lipstick on, puts women's clothes on, and the horse thinks it's a dog. They're feeding that to the little kids. If things are to go on, God forbid, what are those children going to be like by the time they get to teenagers? And they become adults. What are they going to be like? So the church government or organization is this image of the beast. So you have the beast power, the government, with a dictator and on down, and you have the Catholic Church with a pope and on down, which is, again, I say, a complete counterfeit of God's system. The Britannica calls it an ecclesiastical world empire. This image, man-designed and man-ruled church government, compelled people to worship the church. And since the church was organized into a worldly government, that was worship of the image, false worship, idolatry. And isn't that the key word with the Catholic Church? If you ever been to a Catholic cathedral, there's more idols per square inch than you can shake a fist at. It's incredible. But this church became mother, and daughter churches came out of her in protest, calling themselves Protestant, and all have worldly political church government. Upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, Revelation 17 verse 5. Her daughters are called harlots. Together they are called Babylon, confusion. They are pagan, teaching pagan doctrines and customs, cloaked in the name of Christianity, and all nations are deceived. That's pretty bold, isn't it? But is it? It's the truth. Christmas? Ancient festival. Way goes back, way beyond before Christ. Easter? Ask a child. 3 days and three nights between Friday afternoon and Sunday morning. It doesn't work. And it's just not going to work at all. They are harlots. Together they are called Babylon. They are pagan, teaching pagan doctrines and customs, cloaked in the name of Christianity, and all nations are deceived. I just find it so interesting what Mr. Armstrong was talking today in that broadcast. Nails it. Next we come the Mark of the Beast. Again, this is going back to 1952. Mr. Armstrong wrote this in 1952. See, this is all he had to work on. He had these scriptures. And he had prayer, and he had contact with God, and God opened his mind. Christ opened his mind. And him, nobody else. The only truth we have came through the apostle. And he said that. He made it quite clear. It goes to Revelation 13, verse 15. Revelation 13, verse 15. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, and the image of the beast should both speak, and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand and their foreheads, that no man could buy or sell, save that he had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now, a couple of points here. The Catholic Church never killed anybody. They got the civil authorities to do it. So the beast power is going to do the killing. The Catholic Church, it just makes the rules. And if you foul the rules, you are anathema and you're herded off. And the civil authorities will exact the punishment. And we come to this buying and selling. And Mr. Armstrong says, what commandment could it be? What commandment affects a man's job or his business? There's only one possible commandment. The one regarded by the largest number as the least of the commandments. And that is the fourth commandment, which says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. The seventh day is the Sabbath of the eternally your God. Think about it. It was created at creation. It was created before, literally as man was created. Part of the actual creation, the Sabbath. It's not a Jewish day. 2,500 years before a Jew walked on the earth. Why the saints were martyred? Mr. Armstrong continues. It was for obeying God's fourth commandment, keeping the Sabbath, that millions were put to death. The local council of Laodicea in 363 AD passed this decree, quote, Christians must not Judaize by resting on the Sabbath, but must work on that day, resting rather on Sunday. But if any be found to be Judaizing, let them be declared anathema from Christ. That's a death sentence. That's a death sentence. And it says the church caused them to be killed. When the church branded one anathema, a heretic, the state police of the empire began torturing him. Unless he recanted, he was tortured until he died. And they were experts at it. They could keep people alive for weeks. The sadistic mindset of these people is beyond understanding. It really is. Laws became so strict that no man could hold a job or engage in business unless he worked on Saturday and rested on Sunday. And the world will be so geared up, it would be almost impossible for one to buy or sell except he receives this mark of the beast. This is the only commandment which was altered by the Roman Empire. In Daniel 7:25, we read the prophecy of the beast and the little horn, the papacy, rising up, which was to think to change times and laws. That is, change God's law in respect to time, the time for the Sabbath. Sabbath is key. Sabbath is key. I've got the copy of the beast chart. Obviously, for you folks on the internet, if you go to Who is the Beast? And just scroll on down, you'll see the chart, and underneath you'll see a link, and you can just, and it'll print a copy off for you. But if you just look at this chart, again, the original for this was produced before most of us were. It shows the prophecies of the kingdom. Starting off with the first column, you get the Daniel 2, the head of gold, the breast of silver, and so forth. Then you get in the beasts in Daniel 7, and the parallels with the beasts of Revelation. And in Revelation 17, you parallel with that. There's an explanation of the actual symbols. These are all events that have been fulfilled, as it says at the top. They've all been fulfilled in history. What's rather interesting is Greece. You have Alexander the Great, who, as a very young man, went charging off to conquer. And he conquered. But do you realize how far he actually got? We... Many, many, many years ago, I took my wife to a press conference, come dinner, at one of the big hotels in London, and Mrs. Gandhi was there, and the introduction was given by the High Commissioner of India, who was not a gentleman of few words, and he went on for like an hour and a half, hour and three quarters, introducing her. And he started by saying, India has always been a great nation. He said, did you realize that we were at one time controlled by Alexander the Great? Now, you look at a map. He got right through to India. And he died at some, 31 or 2 or something? Very young. And yet in those few years, he went through literally the known world, including India. Quite incredible. And then again, equally incredible, the kingdom when he died was split into four. And that's what it talks about, doesn't it, in the scripture. The leopard, there's four heads. And then you get the seventh head under the Revelation 17, the Roman Empire, AD 31 BC through to AD 76, with its two divisions, east and west. Hence the statue had two legs. And then in you have the 476, you have the fall of the Roman Empire. Then you've got the Vandals, the Heruli, and the Ostrogoths, who all tried to rule Rome and didn't. And they were removed. And then you have the little horn, which is false Christianity and church government, or an image of the Roman Empire. And then that was prophesied to go on for 42 months. And if you take that out, it's 1260 years on a day for a year principle. And that, it's, amazingly, it starts with the imperial restoration in 554 with Justinian. And then you have the Frankish kingdom, the Holy Roman Empire, the German one. You have the Habsburg dynasty and Napoleon, which ended in 1805. And amazingly, it works out exactly to 1260 years. You see, there's a God in heaven who has a plan. That plan is incredibly detailed. I don't think we realize how detailed it really is. Incredibly detailed. And then you come down to the Garibaldi and into Mussolini. Incidentally, Mr. Armstrong, in the booklet, you can check it out there, goes into this Il Duce. If you take the numbers there, the numerical value of that is 666 again. It's quite incredible. And of course we then come to the revived empire, which we're coming to shortly. But can you see it's a mixture of iron and clay? I've seen that in the foundry where the wrong kind of stuff gets into the iron and when it's hot and it bubbles and bubbles and eventually it goes hard and it's full of bubbles, it's full of air. And you just smack it with a hammer, and it just crumbles. Just crumbles to dust. There's no real strength there. It looks strong. Oh, yeah, it looks like iron. But when you give it a good smack, it just crumbles. My dad showed me that in the steelworks. They had a bit of a foundry there, and we'd just been studying this in church and so on. And he said, well, look, there it is. I think he gave Mr. Waterhouse a big chunk of it. It's also very light. There's no substance to it. That's what Europe's going to be like. These people have all got, they've all got different backgrounds, different... The only thing in common with Muslims is religion. That's the only glue that will hold them together. But one time or another, they've all been fighting each other. But have a look over that chart, because it's interesting, and it's interesting that it's never been altered. Mr. Armstrong got it right. Got it right first time. Prophecy is a proof of the existence of God. Who could sit down 500 years before Christ and write that prophecy, the longest prophecy in the Bible, and have it so detailed that the end time apostle would be writing and sorting it out when the sixth head was there ruling in the form of Garibaldi and then Mussolini. That's incredible. You see, we just made a couple of scriptures here. Isaiah 46. We shouldn't be astonished if we just read what's in the Bible. Isaiah 46 verse 9. Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me. No arguments about it. Verse 10. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. In other words, I will fulfill my plan. And of course, what it doesn't say here is, my plan is to create a family, an enormous family, starting with Christ as the first fruit, and then the church as the first fruits, and then the people that live out through the millennium, changed into the God family, and then everybody else who's ever lived. All these people that survived this lot, all these people that are on this chart, all through the centuries, all through the millennium, will all be given a chance to enter that family of God. And he says, declaring the end from the beginning and the ancient times of things that are not yet done. And I think it makes it very clear. When you look at these things and you realize that it's all been intricately planned. Right down to the last jot and the last tittle. And let's make a note of Amos 3 verse 7. We've read this many times. Surely the Lord God will do nothing, but he reveals his secret unto his servants, the prophets. He revealed it to Daniel, but Daniel had no clue as to what was really going on. He then revealed more to the Apostle John, who really didn't understand an awful lot of what was going on. And then along comes Mr. Armstrong. And he had the mind, you know, God worked with him. I think we can see more and more actually how God did work with him. So let's have a look at where we are today. We've read all this. We understand the beast is a revival of the Holy Roman Empire. The image of the beast is the Roman Catholic Church. And the mark of the beast, which will probably be enforced in the tribulation, will be, you know, the Sabbath. They hate the Sabbath. The Catholic Church, I've seen in my own eyes, in their encyclopedia, admit that Saturday is the original Sabbath. And they admit they changed it because that was the Lord's Day, because that's when the Lord was resurrected, which, of course, is a load of bunkum. We go back to the deception again, don't we? Let's just have a look at some of the things that Mr. Armstrong's written over the years, because it's really incredible. The Plain Truth, April 1952. I was 8 years old. Russia may give East Germany back to the Germans and will be forced to relinquish control over Hungary, Czechoslovakia and parts of Austria to complete the 10-nation union. Mr. Armstrong, as you'll see later on, started to understand at that stage that the two legs was the two halves of Europe, East and West. And he's making a very bold statement there, based purely on what he learned in the Bible, what Christ revealed to him. It didn't look at all possible. At all. No ways. The Russians had tied up, especially after the war, the Russians tied up Eastern Europe really tight. It was an iron wall. June 1955, talking about the Holy Roman Empire, he said, "In its final phase, to appear in our day will merely be a resurrection of the ancient Roman Empire, a United States of Europe," a term that nobody else was using really back then, by the way. That was one of his, "which we are beginning to foster within the confines of the ancient Roman Empire. We are building the Frankenstein monster that is destined to destroy us." After the war, America went into Germany and they poured billions of dollars in there. Neglected their poor ally over here. Totally. But they had to get Germany back on its feet. And suddenly you have a German, by the time we got to the 60s, you have a German nation with all the industries brand new. All the latest technology. And they took off. And they've never looked back. And of course they've been protected by America, so they've had virtually no defense spending to talk about. And they are wealthy. And if you look at them as a trading nation, America, China, and Germany are vying constantly as to who's the biggest. Now if you think about that, that's pretty amazing. When you look at the size of China, the size of America, and the size of Germany, is it population of about 80 million or something, 90 million? Somewhere around there. And yet they trade. Their trading is incredible. Plain Truth, March 62. "United within the ancient boundaries of the Holy Roman Empire." You see, this is again, Mr. Armstrong was looking at the map. He knew what it had been, and he's looking at modern Europe. "United by a common spiritual bond of universal Catholicism. United in bludgeoning and booming industrial economy that dominates today's world. United geographically in the most productive and industrial complex on earth. At least 10 nations of modern Europe will march onto the scene of world history as the greatest single human force ever seen by man." Do you realize that the population of this group is bigger than America? Their industrial might is much more. I mean, you look at America, it's a massive country. But there's not a lot in it. You've got centres of industry, yes. But there's an awful lot of blank spots. An awful lot of countryside. Like square miles of the stuff. You can drive all day and see nobody in some places. Quite incredible. It's a huge place. 3,000 miles across. Incredible. Whereas Europe is saturated with cities and industry all over. Not a lot of free space. Here's a quote. Mr. Armstrong had quite a friendship with Dr. Otto von Habsburg, who was one of the descendants of the Habsburg Empire, I believe. And Dr. Habsburg made this comment. "The religious foundation of a society is the only real and lasting foundation that this society may have." Interesting. Mr. Armstrong, of course, latched onto that, didn't he? Because that glue, we have it already. We see with the Pope. The Pope's making comments. He's hauled the European politicians over the coals. He's told them, "You're going the wrong way. You're doing the wrong things." He's telling them where they're going. And it's getting more and more obvious. He's getting more and more involved in politics. Plain Truth, December 63. "So long as the present German prosperity continues, the Nazi takeover will not be possible. But should any severe threat to that hard-won prosperity come, the picture will change violently in Germany." You should remember, it was the aftermath of the disastrous stock market crashes of 1924 and 1929 that fanned the flames of violence in Germany to pave the way for Hitler. "History repeats itself," they say, "and your Bible predicts a great trade war between the economic power in Europe and the United States. It predicts terrible financial collapse of this country, America." Make no mistake, Germany and all Europe would not escape unscathed in a hot trade war between the common market and the United States. Terrible economic disasters would result, and the result from such disasters, a new Nazi Germany. Oh, they've got 92 members now in the Bundestag. And I'll tell you something, we've got Martin Schulz now wanting to go back to Mrs. Merkel and have a talk about a coalition government. Because they all know that if they have another election, the right wing will make more inroads. And if they get to a certain point, they could even form a minority government. Nazis not take over? Oh, yes, it's very possible. Don't forget, Hitler did it legally. He didn't seize power. He was given it. Once he got it, mind you,
He made sure he was never going to lose it. But that's another story. But he did great things for the German people. And they loved him. Contrary to what a lot of people, we didn't know what Hitler was doing. Oh, rubbish. They all knew what was going on. And I've had that from many Germans, by the way.
The Plain Truth, October 64. Germany, a united Germany with her former territories restored. Remember, at this time, East Germany was a separate country. Is ready to emerge as the strongest nation on earth at the head of a revitalized Europe. This powerful colossus is going to then deal a death blow to the United States and Britain. It's already the greatest trading nation virtually on the planet. 78, co-worker letter, August the 14th. Undoubtedly, Germany will head the new resurrected Holy Roman Empire. Who conquered the German armed fist twice in the two great world wars? It was Britain and the United States pouring in the real knockout power. Who will they go forth to destroy? Britain and the United States. Why? Because God said it. He said, O Assyrian, rod of my anger, I will send you against a hypocritical nation. And aren't we in Britain and America today? Are they not hypocritical nations? Again, part of a plan.
Plain Truth, January 1979. I have been proclaiming and writing ever since 1935 that the final one of the 7 years of the Holy Roman Empire is coming in our generation, a United States of Europe, combining 10 nations or groups of nations in Europe with a union of church and state. 1980, US and GB in prophecy. That yoke of slavery without mercy is to be laid on the US and Britain by the coming United Nations of Europe. It has started already through the Economic Common Market and the recently implemented EMS, that's the European Monetary System, which again is history already. Its leaders talk continually of political union, which means also military. Right this morning in the newspaper, it's talking about fast-tracking it now. Because they know that the only way they can hold this Europe together is to get them all doing at least something together, which is the military option. And I believe there's 20 nations already have decided to go along this road. Mr. Armstrong said that was going to happen back in 1980. So far, they've been unable to bring about full political union. This will be made possible by the good offices of the Vatican, who alone can be the symbol of unity which they can all look. Yeah, today's news, full speed ahead for the defense plans. 1981, meaning of the Feast of Tabernacles, Mr. Armstrong mentioned about the 10 nations, 5 from the east, 5 from the west. For example, 10 nations in Europe, probably 5 of them in Western Europe and 5 in Eastern Europe, resurrecting the so-called Holy Roman Empire of the Middle Ages. And that is going to happen very soon now. Satan now is sitting on the throne of this world, and people don't understand that. It looks impossible. It must have looked impossible in 1981. But it happened. 1984, just a year before he died. He says, and politics will enter into it, and I can see where it's going to cause Europe to unite and turn against the United States. And if you want to know what will happen, read the last chapter of the book, United States and Britain in Prophecy. Now, you may have read it. Go home and read it again. Brush up on it and refresh your mind on it, because we're coming to the time when it's going to happen. All right, 30 years ago, forever. It's more than that now, 84. We're here. We can see. You see, one of the big things Mr. Armstrong was criticized for was occasionally he would start putting within 5 years, within, which you do. You, it's looking so bad. You know, we're looking at it now and saying, it can't go on. Yeah, it could do. It could go another few years. But on the other hand, we could be exploding on Monday morning with the collapse of the whole world's financial system. So we just got to keep on going, keep our eyes open. 1985, October, Plain Truth. This must be one of the last things he had in the Plain Truth, I'd imagine. Germany to reunite. This is the 40th anniversary conference of the drafting of the UN Charter, which Mr. Armstrong was witness to. Do not discount the possibility that this resurrection of the medieval Roman Empire may start by some arrangement to reunite East and West Germany first. Before World War II, a mutual accord had been made between Germany and Russia. History often repeats itself. The prophecies of Revelation 13 and 17 and Daniel 2 and 7 show definitely that such a reunited Europe is coming, and soon. That of Daniel 2:23 shows half of this united Europe will consist of Eastern European nations and half of the West. They comprise the toes and the feet of Nebuchadnezzar's great dream image to be destroyed by Christ coming again to earth in supreme supernatural power and glory to rule all nations and bring us world peace. Just 4 years later, the Berlin Wall came down. And if you go into what actually happened, it was all a mistake. It was a series of the most stupid circumstances of people making decisions they shouldn't have done and not making decisions they should have done. And the whole thing just seemed to crumble overnight. I've seen an analysis of it recently. In fact, I might even put it into an update at some stage. It's fascinating how God worked it out, because that's what happened. It shouldn't have happened. It really shouldn't have happened in a sensible world. 1990, Germany reunites. October the 1st, West and East Germany were reborn as a unified nation less than a year after the Berlin Wall was made redundant by the opening of the East German borders. Fireworks lit the sky over Berlin and city streets were once again filled with tearful, celebrating Germans. Remember? Mr. Armstrong wrote back in 1952, Russia may give East Germany back to the Germans and be forced to relinquish her control over Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and parts of Austria. How did it happen? Do you remember? August 1991, a coup d'etat was attempted by hardliners against Gorbachev. This is in Russia, obviously. With the intention of reversing his policies. The coup failed. And Russian President Boris Yeltsin, playing a high-profile role in facing down the coup, resulted in the banning of the Communist Party. Up until then, it had been the USSR. On the 25th of December 1991, Gorbachev resigned and the remaining 12 constituent republics emerged from the dissolution of the Soviet Union as independent post-Soviet states. Bulgaria, Romania, and so on. And all the stands. This resulted in the Eastern European nations gaining their freedom, and they were soon able to join Europe, which they did pretty quick over the next few years. It didn't seem possible. Frankly, looking at it politically, it was crazy. It should never have happened. But it happened because it's all part of a plan that God revealed to Daniel 2,500 years ago. I hope we're getting the point I'm trying to get across is this thing just cannot not work, because God said it's going to work, and it's got, you can go down all the way, time after time after time, and it comes up. Right now, Europe is falling apart at the seams. We're looking at my guess is that Martin Schulz will go back and they'll form a government just to keep the right wing out, but it won't be a very good government and it might not last very long. Britain's on the brink of leaving the EU. The army's being pushed forward with a terrific speed. The Pope's embroiled in politics. Do you know why the Pope wants a united Europe? It's simple. It's far easier for him to control one unit than it is 28 nations. And that's all it's about. The Catholic Church wants control. The Catholic Church rides the beast. The Catholic Church controls the beast. Controls the beast. And then we have the financial collapse again, Mr. Armstrong, July 84. I can see now the event that's going to trigger the formation of the reunification of Europe. And of course, take this forward to where we are now, right? If you read all the reports, I put plenty of them up on the news. Top people are all saying the economy in this world is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. The situation monetarily is far, far worse than 2008. By a country mile. By a country mile. It's amazing how dangerous. And these banks have just continued on and continued on. They just keep printing money. Governments keep on printing money. It's the only way we can get out of it. What's it costing for America to keep six or seven aircraft carriers over there by Korea? The cost per day must be staggering. Absolutely staggering. And what for? Mr. Kim Il-sung. a tiny little republic that can't even afford to feed its own people. China should go in there and just squidge it. But what he makes a comment here, which I just feel, he said, I believe that some event is going to happen suddenly, just like out of a blue sky, and it's going to shock the whole world. And it's going to cause the nations of Europe to realize they must unite. It's going to force them together. And the Pope will make sure they do. He will be the power behind the throne. Interesting that all the foundation members, bar one as far as I remember, were Catholics of this whole thing at the end of the war. All those people, Jean Monnet and so, they were mostly Catholics, and some of them were trained as Jesuits, and I believe one of them was a Jesuit. Just add the numbers up. It's a Catholic idea. It's a Nazi idea. The departments in the present Europe, in the European Parliament, are exactly the same as the Nazis laid out in their plan in 1943. They've been open about it. It's a dictatorship over there. Those men are not elected. They're not elected, not by the public. It's a dictatorship. Well, I know, I think I can see what maybe the very event that's going to trigger it, and that is an economic situation in the world. And then later on he says, now when the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. I just wanted to say that much. Maybe you can begin to see how serious this can all become. Think about it. It might be short and sharp and nasty, but out of it will probably come a new system. I do worry about, about 1 Thessalonians 5, where it says, when they say peace and safety, then sudden disruption comes. Why are they saying peace and safety? Well, is it because there hasn't been peace and safety for a while? Can you imagine if the whole financial thing just implodes? This world is $250 trillion in debt. To whom? To whom? For the bankers, of course. It's amazing the madness that's going on. Well, it's mad because the government behind it's got a problem. Well, so what do we do? Well, we watch and we pray, obviously. But there's one thing we can do. We need to focus on the future. We understand that in the short term, life can become difficult for God's people. Our focus must be on the return of Jesus Christ and our part in that world tomorrow as kings and priests, rulers and teachers. And just look at what the results are going to be. This is from Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, chapter 6. Quoting from Isaiah 19, verses 23 to 25. In that day, shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian shall come into Egypt, and the Egyptian into Assyria, and the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, which is what they were supposed to have been in the Old Testament, and weren't. Whom the Eternal of Hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the works of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. You see what I mean? This is where the plan goes. This is the direction the plan is going. And we'll have a part in this part. This will be part of our job. Mr. Armstrong says, what a utopian prediction that is. Egypt and Germany are pictured in loving, respectful, serving cooperation with the very peoples they contended with in the past. Think about it. Co-worker letter, just two little quotes here in finishing here. Co-worker letter, August the 14th, 1978. Mr. Armstrong says, brethren, if we are to be taken to a place of protection from the great tribulation, we shall have to have real faith in Christ and his promises. Part of the thing of going over this is to help us to understand what we're a part of. We're a part of that prophecy that was given 2,500 years ago. Should that not give us confidence? If all that prophecy has been fulfilled, the little bit that's coming up, is that not going to be fulfilled as well? Absolutely. A spiritual revival within the church is virtually a life and death matter of urgency. Now, I ask you, pray as never before. Did we get it? Most didn't. Well, Mr. Armstrong's final warning still stands. To all of God's people, no matter which group they're in, at the end of the US and GB in prophecy, he says, "By God's direction and authority, I have laid the truth before you." Get that? I've read over that in the past, and I read it the other night there, and I thought, wow, that's a real statement. By God's direction and authority, I have laid the truth before you. To neglect it will be tragic beyond imagination. To heed will bring blessings, happiness, and glory beyond description. The decision is now yours.